First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
A Regeneron clinic opens in the downtown library, and a shocking image of distressed patients goes viral. The battle over mask mandates continues in Florida schools, and hospitalizations from the virus continue to tick up. Those are the stories making headlines this week. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. And just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Listen live on the radio. You can also now watch our live stream on our Facebook page, our YouTube page, our website, and even on demand at PBS Jack's Passport. Then later in the hour, why a Navy ship museum might soon be sailing into downtown. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss yet another intense week in the news, we welcome Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times-Union. Hey, Dan.
Hey, good morning.
Tim Gibbons is with us, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal. Hi, Tim.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Good to have you. WJCT News reporter Sydney Bowles. Hi, Sydney.
Morning, Melissa.
And rounding out our foursome, writer and independent journalist, Shelton Hull. Hey, Shelton.
Good morning.
Good to have you all. Lots to talk about this week. We'll go to your calls in a moment. Join us, everybody, 549-2937. But let's begin with our top story. You might have seen that a photo went viral this week showing COVID-19 patients lying on the floor of the new antibody treatment clinic at the downtown Jacksonville Public Library. The image, which was first posted on Reddit, shows people in distress lying on the ground, moaning in pain, as they seek the Regeneron treatment for COVID touted by the governor. Now, the library is closed now for patients. As patients seek the treatment, it's only open to this Regeneron clinic. The photo has horrified people across America. It's a visual depiction of a spiraling situation in our Florida healthcare system and the overall COVID response to the pandemic. 549-2937. We're going to begin the hour with a closer discussion of this. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Let's begin with our own reporter, Sydney Bowles. Sydney, you ran this down, authenticated that this photo is accurate. The city of Jacksonville confirmed it is accurate. And you learned a little bit more about who took the picture and the people that are in the photo. What did you learn?
Right. So yesterday afternoon, I was able to speak with Louis Lopez, who's a Jacksonville resident who took the photo. He said that he is vaccinated, but he had a breakthrough infection. And he went to the clinic to try to get this Regeneron treatment in the hopes that it would prevent him from needing to be hospitalized, which, to be clear, that is a use case that, Regeneron seems to be helpful with. So that's good news that that's a treatment that's available. Lopez said that he went to the clinic and the lines were very long. There were people who appeared to be very sick, which is at a point where you shouldn't be getting Regeneron. You should be getting to a hospital. And there weren't, it didn't seem that the library conference area was equipped to handle the number of people that they were dealing with, right? We had people lying on the floor. We had people sharing chairs. And then he said that as he was waiting, you know, 2+ hours, more people were coming in and very sick people were lying on the floor. He said, you know, the picture doesn't convey the pain that he could hear in people's voices as they were sort of crying out and moaning while they were lying on the floor. It was just an incredible scene that he witnessed.
Not only that, this is happening in our public library, which has been closed to library patrons while this Regeneron clinic is set up. The governor barnstormed the state promoting Regeneron. He came to Jacksonville to tout this Regeneron strike team in our area. It was originally at a trailer on Bay Street, moved over to the library on August 16th. Dan Scanlon, a City of Jackson employee, told WJCT News the whole process felt rushed. She told Sydney the fact that there was no forward thought or planning went into it, raised alarms. It was just that we were told the governor said so, so we're going to do it. So we have several hundred people a day, Dan, coming in for Regeneron treatment, most of them unvaccinated. And as Sydney said, certainly we need all hands on deck to fight this virus. That said, the governor has come under a lot of criticism for not more heavily promoting vaccination and masking. If you protect yourself from getting COVID, you might not need Regeneron.
2 points here. Number one, if you are that sick, then you should be going to an emergency room and not going to a library site where there's not really great parking except for a parking garage next door. Two, the city did a pretty good job, 16 months ago, setting up response to the original pandemic, especially at the Prime Osborne, where there is parking, where there is a lot of room to put these people at ease and to put these people into lines. And also, if you need a rescue unit, it's an immediately quick place to bring one up and take someone who is as ill as these people. This photo has probably gone viral worldwide, and it just shows the inadequacy of response. Now, that said, the city apparently got together and made it a lot better, more wheelchairs, more waiting space pretty quickly. But you're right, it sounds rushed, and unfortunately, two people didn't have even a place to sit, and they should have been in the hospital anyway.
The woman depicted on the floor of the library in pain and distress did perk up after getting Regeneron, apparently, and she did encourage everyone to get vaccinated and go to the hospital if they're sick. Tim Gibbons, of course, our hospitals are nearly at the breaking point in Florida and a number of other southern states, dealing with mainly unvaccinated COVID patients.
That is the issue that I think people have kind of forgotten about after the initial rush of COVID, where there were daily briefings talking about the hospital levels and ICU bed utilizations, that hospitals only have so much capacity. And even a treatment that is a good treatment if administered early enough, is the point of it is it's better if we don't have people filling those beds, if we don't have people who healthcare providers have to turn their attention to. You look at other cities where you have city officials saying things like, if you get into a car wreck or if your kid's appendix bursts, that there's not a bed for them. And that's kind of the nightmare scenario, that once all of the capacity in the healthcare system is taken up by COVID patients, there's not capacity for all the other healthcare needs that we have.
Yeah. 549-2937. That is, I don't know what else we need to say to get through to people, Shelton Hull, that if you continue to refuse to be vaccinated, you're endangering others. And if you get into a car accident or a loved one has a heart attack or even a broken ankle, they're not going to get good care right now in the ER simply because of this crisis that we are in.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. This, in the terms of tennis, you could call this a sort of unforced error. Mayor Curry's done a fairly decent job. Some would disagree. He's done a better job handling this pandemic than the governor has. The governor brought him in on this, came down to Jacksonville once again for another one of those photo ops that Nate Monroe loves to talk about. And he kind of shanghaied the mayor into a public humiliation. We are Jacksonville, Florida, once again making national news, once again making international news on something stupid and embarrassing and preventable. The public library, particularly the main library, particularly now the first week of the school year, when we'd normally be getting flooded with out there teachers and students, you take a public resource that people are using for information, for job training, for English as a second language, for just safe and secure meetups, from teenagers to old people. You take a place like this, a shrine to learning, part of our tourist economy, and then just poison it for no good reason by taking this thing. They could have put it in Regency Mall. They could have put it in any one of these malls that weren't working that well before and aren't working well now. Instead, they put it there. It's a waste. It wastes that library. Think about having to clean that place. It's centralized ventilation, HVAC all through there. How do you got to clean that whole thing out? So, it's really silly. The Regeneron therapy, we've seen all the controversies about it and whatnot. That's all fine and good, but the optics of this are inexcusable, and it's one of the most embarrassing things that this city has had happen on a national scale in quite some time, and we're doing this sort of thing on almost a yearly basis, it seems.
Here's a tweet from Mandy. I didn't realize the entire main library was closed in order to host Regeneron. Officially, the library is closed for upgrades is what they're telling us. She goes on to say, we have 22 branches in our library system, so patrons can go to any of them. Still, why are they not utilizing previous COVID testing locations rather than taking away a public service? Sydney Bowles, you know, there is free parking around the library that the city set up. They covered up all the parking meters, so if you need to go and get Regeneron, you can park for free. But do we know why the library was chosen, how this all came together? And we did hear that the city was waiting on direction from the governor's office for this. And then, then it was suddenly decided that the library was going to be the location for this Regeneron clinic.
This is another one of those things that I'm just obsessed with the way that this happened, because you're right. There is central AC and central ventilation throughout this building, but that wasn't what was originally disclosed to folks working there. Folks were told the conference center has separate ventilation. People working there knew that wasn't the case. They raised the alarm, and then eventually the city did come in and close the site this past weekend to install some sort of air filtration system that would ostensibly, hopefully, separate the conference center from the rest of the library. We don't really know how effective that was, how thorough that was, because it happened really fast, and it only happened because people working there knew better than what they were being told and raised heck about it. The other piece of this is that one other factor that may have gone into determining why the library was chosen is that this conference center was the site that was used previously in the rollout of the rent, mortgage, and utility distribution process. So the city did have some evidence about how the space works for that kind of in and out COVID-related effort. But, you know, there's a difference between helping someone fill out paperwork to get rent relief versus a medical procedure in a medical environment.
Yeah, it's my understanding you get several shots of Regeneron when you go in for this treatment and that you're going to be there a while. On our Facebook page, Martin writes, the governor is acting irresponsibly. He continues to play politics around a public health crisis. Masks and vaccines are the ticket out of this nightmare. Surgeon General Scott Rivke's silence has been deafening. Dan Scanlon, the Florida Surgeon General Scott Rivkes has been completely sidelined throughout this crisis. Governor DeSantis has been heavily criticized for the way he's handling pandemic response. Political observers feel that because he cannot afford to alienate a conservative base of voters who is hostile to masks and vaccination, he's caught betwixt and between. He has to try to oversee public health, but he doesn't want to lose the votes of people who might help him run for president in 2024. And as Shelton pointed out this week, Jacksonville got caught in the crosshairs of the governor's political ambitions.
Correct. There's certainly been some discussion about Regeneron and the governor's fundraising. Our mask situation is top story right now on NPR with Florida school board meetings and people yelling about masks and we don't need them. And I would think if you're running for president, you might want to consider doing the best for the most people so that you get your message across and we don't hear anything about masks or vaccine pushes. Our own mayor is certainly pushing vaccines anytime he's asked. So why not the state's top Republican?
Yeah, the governor, let's go to Tim Gibbons. The governor has tweeted about everything in the world but vaccination, Tim.
It is interesting, the break between the city and the state. I mean, we have a mayor who was the former head of the Republican Party of Florida, but frankly, from the beginning of the pandemic, you've seen him go in a at least somewhat different direction. Mm-hmm. We have things like trying to have a GOP convention here, but he was very upfront on mask wearing at the beginning stages of the pandemic. He's vocal about vaccinations now. It's an interesting split where you have a governor who very much is trying to appease that base while the rest of the state is focused on, you know, basically trying to keep its population healthy. If you're a mayor, you can see this in the cities across Florida where you've had mayors make hard choices over the past 17, 18 months that I think the governor's gotten some of the credit for. When those choices have played out and infection rates have fallen, Governor DeSantis has been able to point to them and say, look, my plan is working. What you have is mayors who are making much more difficult choices and not just doing photo ops.
And sometimes fighting the mayor or the governor in court. 549-2937. It's our Friday Media Roundtable with Tim Gibbons, Shelton Hull, Sydney Bowles, Dan Scanlon, and yours truly. And you, call us up now, 549-2937. Eric is in Arlington. Hi, Eric. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. I'm just, it says something about our values and how conflicted we are about all this. The amount of money and technology put into, say, an Amber Alert. Like, so a child is in danger, possibly in some place in Tampa or somewhere, and every single person in the whole state cell phone goes off. Every single person. That's a lot of technological resources being dedicated to the possible health of one, endangered health of one child. And yet people are just dropping like flies, and we're not using the sort of technological, you know, applying the same values and resources to the Amber Alert that we have to COVID. It's very strange. It's bizarre. It's almost biblical. I'm starting to feel sorry for people that are on the wrong side of this, like DeSantis, because as time goes on, I think history is going to show them to be completely wrong about all this. Thanks.
Thank you, Eric. You know, I think that's a really good analogy, and I made a similar one yesterday. Let's talk about kids now. Shelton Hull, if there is a lice outbreak in a school, they shut that down as fast as they can. They notify every single parent that they think might have come into contact with the kid who has lice. They isolate that child. They make sure lice doesn't spread. Okay. Contact tracing in schools has varied greatly around the state. For example, in Hillsborough County over in Tampa, thousands of kids are in quarantine because they've been doing better contact tracing than, say, Duval or St. John's counties on our side of the state. At the same time, the State Board of Education Tuesday voted to use enforcement powers against Alachua schools. That's Gainesville, because that district is defying the governor's order about masks. They're requiring students in that district to wear masks unless they have a doctor's note. They issued some vague threats to the Alachua County School District. A number of districts are now defying the governor and his commissioner of education, Richard Corcoran, on this. The governor had first threatened to defund school districts or dock the pay of school officials. He doesn't have the power to do that, so he may now seek to remove education officials that are seeking to protect kids with mask mandates. So, you know, you can judge a society by how you treat its children. And in that context, concerned parents in particular that we're hearing from, Shelton, feel that Florida is failing its children.
Well, they're absolutely right. I mean, you pile this on top of the last 5, 10, 20 years of aggressively, you know, delegitimizing the authority of teachers in public schools, delegitimizing the cause of public education in general across this nation. This is just another cherry on top of the cake. It's not a cake you'd want to eat, especially in some of these cafeterias. That's a different story. I have a friend who's a teacher. She's in the first week of school. She's got about 500 kids. She's already been exposed to COVID 7 times through her students. And in none of these cases was she directly informed by the authorities. This is something she got through the grapevine, through this network of parents and teachers. And I tell you, you know, thank goodness for social media and thank goodness for an independent press. You know, you look at the way things were, you know, a year and a half ago, Folio had gone out of business. You know, Time Union is always facing pressures and stuff. But, you know, reporters like Sydney, like Emily, like Nate, like Dan, like Timothy, you know, they're out there every day on the front lines getting us as the readers this information that we are, frankly, not supposed to have at this point. DeSantis is apparently, the story is that he's doing all this stuff you know, in hopes of boosting his credibility, boosting his bona fides for the next round of campaigns. But what he's really doing is burning bridges and creating, you know, enemies for himself that already existed, or boosting him up among other mayors in this state. You know, putting Lenny Curry in a position like they put him in this week, you know, that's not the kind of thing you get to do too many times, you know, and still enjoy his favor. And, you know, we already know about how they're reacting to him in Miami-Dade, how they're reacting to him in Orlando and Tampa. And, but it doesn't matter what he really thinks about Alachua, because, you know, Gainesville is Gator Nation, and Gator Nation will do what they want as regards their kids. And they're not going to hear anyone else's opinion about it, least of all from Tallahassee.
549-2937. We should note that after the State Board of Education said it will sanction the Alachua School Board, U.S. Education Secretary Miguel Cardona wrote a letter to the governor and the education commissioner saying that the Biden administration is going to somehow get involved with this to support Florida school districts. We will be interviewing Dr. Miguel Cardona, the federal secretary of education, today at noon on our statewide program, the Florida Roundup. Please tune in for that. In the meantime, lots of calls here in Jacksonville. Ann is on the line in Jacksonville. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Melissa. I'm just livid. After looking at that photo yesterday of the woman on the floor, we've been woefully unprepared for a while. And why are we being reactive and not proactive? Just this morning, I left a dailies off Roosevelt Avenue. Not a single person other than one person behind the counter had on a mask, including a JSO officer. Telescope Health is telling us this week they actually had to stop giving tests because they ran out of tests and they didn't have enough staff. The next day they had 400 people show up, 270 the day before. And there's also the trickle-down effect. You know, my aunt was just diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. She can't have an operation because they're not having elective surgeries right now. So people that have cardiac issues that were due, you know, to have scheduled procedures, nothing's happening. Everything's at a standstill. I just don't know. I think as a born and raised in Jacksonville, that was one of the lowest points. You know, this is going to go national with that photograph if it hasn't gone already.
It already has.
It's one of the lowest points as a nurse. It's just disgusting. Have we sunk to that low of a position in our city? It's just a shame. I'm just livid and disgusted. My son's a firefighter. My husband's a teacher. We're exposed every day for people. And what does it take? I'll take your comments off air. I'm just disgusted.
Thank you, Ann. It is terrible. And Sydney Bowles, you know, again, this must be stressed. We are in a crisis situation. Healthcare workers, educators, firefighters, police, everybody involved, they're all tired. They're all stressed. This is difficult on everyone. We're going to make mistakes. It's not going to ever be a perfect response anywhere. That said, the failure to aggressively promote vaccination and masking at the statewide level is prolonging the pain and suffering of Florida residents. That is a fact.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was listening to your show yesterday, I think, when Dr. Sunil Joshi was on, and I really appreciated his comment shouting out the people who work at the Department of Health. I think it's important to recognize that, you know, even when it feels really dire, the people who work there are good people who got into the work because they care about public health, and they're underfunded, and they've been understaffed, and they're under a lot of stress.
And not to cut you off, local health departments like the Duval County Health Department have power has been completely consolidated in Tallahassee.
Sure.
They don't
get
to do a thing without asking permission first from Tallahassee. That did not used to be the case.
Right. And, you know, I think I want to also shout out a parent at Pine Forest Elementary here in Jacksonville, Agata Gardner. She's done really hero's work collecting statements from parents and teachers talking about their experience trying to handle contact tracing, people who've been on the phone for hours with the Department of Health trying to tell the Department of Health that their kid tested positive, or trying to figure out whether they should go to school or not. Teachers who feel like they've been strong-armed by the district or by their own principals into not telling parents when they're aware of an exposure. it really seems like this this effort to clamp down on who knows what is causing a ton of anxiety among parents.
Jim tweets the show, getting back to the Regeneron clinic at the library. Regeneron is administered by infusion. It's a more intrusive process than a simple vaccine shot. The governor is promoting his donor's treatment over prevention. There is an indirect tie to a donor to the governor and the Regeneron medicine, although it's not a direct quid pro quo by any means. Jim goes on to say he is benefiting from his choices while claiming he is protecting our choices. Let's go to Kendra in Mandarin. Kendra, go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the air. And I just wanted to say that for public schools, we can hardly handle a lice outbreak on a good day. We are not prepared to handle COVID on a bad day. And to make this into a political issue really trivializes the fact that this is a major global health crisis, the biggest in our lifetime. Thank you.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Kendra. You're right. And I tried to make that point a few minutes ago, that this is so enormous that we have to give people some grace. This is very difficult. But the other side of that that I was trying to point out was that if we had had political leadership at the statewide level that listened to the advice of scientists and doctors and public health experts, not people like a psychiatrist in LA who has no background in virology or epidemiology, giving the governor advice about how to respond to the pandemic. Those are the kinds of advisors he has advising him on pandemic response. If we had had a more aggressive push for vaccination, contact tracing, testing, masking, and distancing consistently from the beginning, we would not be in this place now. Linda in Mandarin. Hi, Linda.
Good morning. Thank you for segueing into that, because I have distressed relatives from all over the country. They have their own level of hotspots, but, you know, we're the epicenter. And when they see this stuff, they call me panicked. You know, they think I'm in a third world country down here in Jacksonville. Every time we have an incident, the mayor, I know he is a Republican, but he's a business promoter. How can you bring an industry here? Every time we turn around, we're on national news for some crazy stuff that he is bowing to the governor to help facilitate. I am just, for people out there, I'm just so afraid for us, because we have no protection from our government locally. People are talking about the government has in the vaccine. Regeneron was just approved like 2 months ago, but people are willing to take that versus a vaccine that went through stringent protocol for years. So
yeah, that's what's so mind-blowing, Linda, is that there's emergency authorization for this treatment. Right. People are okay with that, but they're not okay with taking a vaccine that was authorized for emergency use.
And what I tell my friends is by the same FDA people, the same FDA that regulated the insulin you got and the high blood pressure medicine you take, is the same FDA that authorized the vaccine after, you know, eons of research before we had an incident that they had to accelerate the research for this. So this is the cynical thing. The governor is counting on enough of us to be dead or forgetful, or for that small 35% that's vocal to ram him up to the governorship or the presidency. I believe in democracy. I do not believe our governor believes in democracy. He stripped us from home rule for our education. He stripped our mayors from home rule to do mask mandates. He is Trump 2.0. He thinks he's a better version. And he's playing with the citizens of Florida. And me in Jacksonville, I haven't seen a relative in over 2 years, and I'm in a hot spot. Who wants to see me when we have over 30,000 cases a day? I am incensed with this governor. And just for all of those who believe in, he's going to reap what he sows. I'm not wishing bad luck on him, but you cannot be this negligent. If he was able to be sued, he would be in jail right now.
Well, he is being, excuse me, not to cut you off. There are a number of lawsuits moving already, but they're not personal. Yeah, they're not personal against him personally.
Well, I mean, and we as taxpayers get to fund that.
Yeah, thank you for that, Linda. You are right about that. To bring it back to the numbers, let's go to Dan Scanlon. Thursday, Florida reported 2.9 million COVID cases statewide, 41,937 deaths. Compare that to a state like, say, I don't know, Vermont, which has high vaccination rates. They're down to maybe a handful of cases a week, Dan. Now, granted, they're a much smaller state than we are, but that shows you what a difference vaccination can make. In Florida, 10.9 million Florida residents, that's just above 50%, are fully vaccinated. We're at half the population, whereas a state like a Vermont or a Maine and a few others, they're right around 70%, which means that they have achieved herd immunity and they don't have to live the way we're living.
Correct. And, you know, despite the fact that we have only 50-50 for vaccinations, those of us who are vaccinated are still at risk. A family member of mine contracted it after vaccination last week. The family was all on lockdown last week. I talked to the sheriff yesterday. He had been vaccinated, and he ended up spending most of last week out of pocket because he was feeling ill from it. It didn't knock him out, but he said he felt vaguely flu-like. So it happens, and then this week I've written a story about a beloved Mandarin firefighter, fire lieutenant who rode rescue out there, and he died of it, and he's been helping more people than you can probably count with COVID, and a frontline warrior gets it, and then we've lost multiple teachers as well in the Duval County area and in Northeast Florida from it, and many of them were vaccinated. So guess what, guys? It's here. It's mutating. It's going to cause us problems. I'm eagerly awaiting to get my booster shot in December.
Right, and let's be clear. If you are fully vaccinated and you still get a breakthrough case of COVID, what that means is that you did the right thing. You, if you had not gotten vaccinated, you would have ended up in the hospital. The small percentage of people who have serious breakthrough cases of COVID, despite being fully vaccinated, have underlying conditions. Please don't say, oh, well, I'm hearing of people getting sick even though they've been vaccinated. Well, they would have been sicker if they hadn't been vaccinated. Because this variant is raging, vaccines are going to lose effectiveness over time. And the reason for that is we didn't stop the virus the first couple of times it flashed around. The reason for that is not enough people got vaccinated. So the virus stayed alive and it kept mutating and it kept finding new hosts. If everybody had gotten vaccinated, it would not have had any more hosts to go to. Jason in San Marco.
Hey, Melissa, good morning. The first thing I want to say is that your show really deserves a special award for the public service you've done in trying to help all the citizens of Jacksonville, Duval County, and through your Friday roundup. You guys have actually done more than the governor to try and prevent the spread of this disease. So my hat is off to what you've
done.
Well,
we're just trying to report the news. Thank you, though.
Sure. I had a couple things I wanted to comment on. Number one is that there's the famous saying, you know, crises don't build character, they reveal it. Crises don't build ignorance, they reveal it. And you just have to hope that 1 or 2 or 3% of the Republican electorate realizes that Ron DeSantis is a terrible governor. Because if not, he's going to be reelected. The other thing I want to say is that there was very recently a story in the Times Union, I believe, about a nice lady who was a faculty member at a charter school that was a science academy, and she died of COVID.
Yeah, River City Science Academy. That. Yeah, she did.
Yes. And I'm just like going, okay, we have a faculty member at a science academy that is a charter school, and I'm like, I don't know. I'm assuming she was not vaccinated or she wouldn't have died from this disease. And then I noticed as I read the entire story, the Science Academy isn't even reporting the statistics on their school. I don't want people who graduate from that Science Academy in charge of science Okay.
All right,
that's
Jason.
My humble statement.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't want to pick on individual schools, but thank you. And certainly that is part of the problem. Private schools, other schools, they don't have to report in the same way. That has made it harder in some cases. Okay, I want to get back to something else. Tim Gibbons, you know, the governors we've been talking about, has been tussling over whether you can mandate masks or mandate vaccines. Norwegian Cruise Lines won a battle against the governor in court over this. They are going to be able to require passengers docking, you know, getting onto a ship in Florida to show that they've been vaccinated. A new survey shows a majority of Florida residents support vaccine passports for flights, cruises, even going out to eat. So from a business perspective, Tim, let's talk about this, where the public is on this.
Yeah, I mean, businesses want to be able to do what they feel they need to do to keep their customers and their staff safe. One of the ironies, and I think it's actually part of one of the reasons for the frustration, is a lot of the approach to take your hands off what businesses are doing sort of thing actually feels like it violates some long-held kind of bedrock principles of conservatives. The idea that if you're a Republican who's anti-regulation, except when it comes to a cruise line saying that people have to be vaccinated. That creates a certain amount of frustration of, if you actually believe that businesses often have the best interest of their customers and staff in mind and are trying to do what they need to do their business, let them go and do it. And that's been a bedrock principle of the Republican Party, except in this case. And I think that's part of the reason why you get the level of frustration where the philosophical underpinnings of the response that would typically say local school boards are in charge. Well, yes, except not when they do something we don't like. It becomes a just kind of ad hoc sort of response that people can't fit into a general framework. It is frustrating for businesses who feel that these are steps they have to take. And it's pretty frustrating for businesses throughout the pandemic who have taken steps to keep their staff and keep their customers safe. And now you have other businesses who are basically flouting those things. It becomes a competitive disadvantage, which is unfair to those businesses trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, Sydney Bowles, you know, a judge did rule this week, a circuit judge, that parents in Florida do have standing to challenge the governor's executive order on masks in schools. Here's something remarkable. A lawyer representing the state said in court that he was not sure if any person or any government body has standing to challenge the governor's executive order. Basically, an attorney for the governor argued in court that people are not allowed to challenge the governor. The judge didn't see it that way. We have an independent judiciary in this country. At least right now, we still do. But this is remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty unbelievable argument, and it's good that the judge was not amenable to that. We are seeing some of these lawsuits go forward, and I think, you know, I wouldn't want to speculate on how those are likely to turn out. I do think, though, that as these cases go forward, and as we're hearing from the feds, you know, I'm really curious to listen to your interview with the ed secretary in just a couple hours. It seems fairly clear that there's a legal framework and a political framework for teachers, for businesses, and for school districts to impose mask mandates, despite the posturing from DeSantis. It's just a matter of finding the political backbone to do it.
Dan Scanlon, we are seeing a number of school districts now flex on this. None in our area, we need to point out, but in other parts of the state. No, I think we might have lost Dan. Shelton Hull.
I'm here.
Hey, Dan, go ahead.
Well, unfortunately, I did lose you for a while, so I don't know what your question was.
Just that we're going to have to continue to follow this battle between school districts in Florida and the governor's office. As Sydney mentioned, we will be speaking with Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona today at noon on our statewide program, the Florida Roundup.
And I guess as a parent and a grandparent, I'm still amazed that we have 6.5% of our students whose parents have opted them out of masks. And then to find out, as the Times Union is reporting, that if you are a student in a mask and you want to sit away from someone who isn't masked, the district says you cannot do that. I think that would be up to a teacher to decide how to organize his or her classroom.
Brian in Jacksonville. Hi, Brian. Thanks for holding. Go ahead. Go ahead, Brian. All right, Brian. Let's try Jack, Intercoastal West. Hello, Jack. How are you?
Hi, Melissa. And hello to everybody on the roundup today. I just want to talk very quickly about the whole issue with the State Board of Education. I think a big thing to keep in mind is that a big reason why we're in this problem with this board is that the state decided to move to an appointed board and an appointed commissioner of education, and we don't have people who, these people aren't responsible to us, and we can't hold them to account as voters because we gave up that right. And I think that this situation needs to lead to a conversation about whether or not we need to bring education back under the control of voters statewide. So that's all I have for today. Thank y'all.
All right. Thanks, Jack. You know, there, I mean, we could go on all day, Shelton Hull, about whether officials should be elected or appointed. Some are, there are a number of commissions and boards that are appointed by the governor, or locally the mayor might appoint people. You know, most of the people, we need to be clear, on the State Board of Education don't really have an educational background.
That's true. It may or may not be helpful. You know, longtime listener Jimmy Midiat, he sent a tweet earlier talking about, in response to what we were saying about the Regeneron therapy, and the tweet said, four shots, two in the arm, two in the stomach. And you know, it being Friday in Jacksonville, I kind of forgot what he was talking about. We could have been talking about almost anything at that point. People are very concerned now. It gets into this sort of general theme of delegitimizing the authority of government. It sort of gets back to when Trump was elected president, and he put people in as cabinet secretaries who had deliberately previously spoken out against the very departments they were in charge of regulating. It's gotten to where folks, you know, the conspiracy theorists who wonder whether there's some kind of shady thing going on with all this, they're getting more and more ammunition, literally and figuratively, getting back to that tweet earlier. It's very sad. We're coming now into a phase, you know, we're getting up towards the holidays. We're looking at another holidays potentially jeopardized by this situation. A parent pointed out to me recently that this is actually the third straight school year that's been affected by this. The end of 2020, the end of the 2020 year, the 2020-2021 year, and now we're 2021 into 2022. Mm-hmm. And as far as the, you know, the information, you know, we, as the Free Press, we are providing information that has in many cases been suppressed, censored, shredded, you know, erased, redacted in some way by government. But if, you know,
well,
if I,
I
were
mean,
governor,
I would push back a little on that. I do think I really do think that the Florida Press Corps has been trying very hard to inform the public. But go ahead, Sean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. That's what I mean. The Florida Press Corps has done their very best in very challenging circumstances. Absolutely. If it were up to me, you know, I'd kind of put the supervisor of elections in charge of putting the information out. They're usually very good about keeping up with, you know, the political system. I think if all the data was getting filtered through them, they might, they'd probably have an app for it by now.
You know, so much of the problem we're having is too much information too. And a lot of it is misinformation or disinformation. Sydney Bowles, that has been incredibly frustrating.
I will tell you, having gone to a number of the school board meetings where parents are encouraged to share their perspectives with elected officials, it is remarkable the amount of disinformation that has become a part of the discourse. We've heard parents in our community say things like, you know, all of the journalists are telling you vaccines work, don't you think that's kind of suspicious? Or questioning the expertise of doctors, mm-hmm. you know, referring to unverified social media posts and non-experts, bunk science. This stuff is really, really a part of our conversation. It's not something that we can fix here locally on our own. It's something we have to combat, but it has to be fixed. Excuse me, it has to be fixed nationally. It's a much bigger problem than just Jacksonville.
It certainly is. I recommend a great book about that. It's called The Death of Expertise by Tom Nichols, how America has just decided that they the average person posting on YouTube knows better than someone who's devoted their life to studying something. Okay, we are almost out of time. No time for a lightning round. Tebow time is over. Tim Tebow had his moment with the Jaguars. That is over and out for him. The next preseason game is Monday, and we'll be following that on the show here. In the meantime, I want to thank all of you so much for being with us. Dan Scanlon, who had to sign off a minute ago, Tim Gibbons, Sydney Bowles, and Shelton Hull. Thanks for all you do to inform the public, and be safe this weekend. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You too. In a moment, some other news. We'll tell you why a retired Navy vessel from the World War II era could be the city's next downtown museum and how you can tour it on the North Bank. That's coming up. We'll be right back.
The Jacksonville area is home to two Navy bases, a Coast Guard headquarters, and a major National Guard base. It's an important city when it comes to national security. Join the American Security Project at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, August 24th, in partnership with ADAPT, to learn about how our region's military installations are rising to meet the threat of climate change. Reserve your ticket now at wjct.org/events.
Coming soon, booster shots. Coming home, Americans trapped in Afghanistan.
And if there's American citizens left, we're going to stay till we get them all out.
And cutting back, the government declares the first ever water shortage from a river that serves 40 million people in the West. We'll get to all of it on this week's Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, as we were talking about a moment ago, there are now Regeneron monoclonal antibody treatment clinics in Jacksonville, Ormond Beach, and a handful of other locations around Florida. It's not an easy treatment. It requires a number of injections or infusions. It can lower your blood pressure, cause extreme nausea, dizziness. It can even lower your resistance to being infected a second time with COVID-19. The best course of action to keep from getting coronavirus in the first place is by getting vaccinated, wearing a face mask, and social distancing. If you are positive for COVID and in the early stages of the disease, Regeneron may be helpful in preventing more serious symptoms or hospitalization. And you can go to the downtown library for treatment. You can walk up, and parking is free around the library. So we wanted to make sure that you had all of the facts and background on that. Okay, turning to another headline now. It's been in the works for years,
And now the city council has approved funding and all the logistical approval for a retired naval vessel from the World War II era to eventually dock on the downtown north bank of the St. John's River. The USS Orlick is eventually going to be converted to a museum, and you can learn all about the history of the Navy when you tour the ship. For more on this, I spoke with Justin Weekland. He's a veteran and also one of the leaders of this effort. It's the Jacksonville Historic Naval Ship Association. So tell us about this exciting news. This has been in the works for a long time, a retired Navy ship becoming a downtown museum. The USS Orlick is coming to town. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, so the Orlick was built during World War II. So it was actually in the water in 1945. And then it went on to serve in the Korean War, Vietnam War, and later it actually served during Desert Storm with the Turkish Navy. So it was actually sold to the Turkish Navy and served in the Desert Storm. Yep, so it's been through three wars, actually.
And how did you settle on this ship to come to Jacksonville to create a naval museum, a floating museum on the banks of the river?
Yeah, okay. So we originally started about 12 years ago with trying to create the USS Charles F. Adams Naval Museum. Unfortunately, about 2 years ago, the Navy just wasn't going to donate the ship. So instead, the Navy decided to scrap the Adams. When that news broke about the Adams not coming to Jacksonville, the USS Orlick Naval Museum had called us and said, hey, we have a great ship and no pier. You folks in Jacksonville have a great piers and no ship. Let's talk about, you know, transferring the ship. And that's kind of how it started. So over the last 2 years, we've traveled to Lake Charles, Louisiana, where the ship is at. We've done inspections on board. We've done many walkthroughs and preps and learned a lot about the history of the ship that has just incredible history. So that's why we decided to bring the ship here.
And so let's paint a picture for our listeners. The Orlick would be docked downtown on the north bank of the river at the western edge of the shipyard's property, which is being developed. What will people see when your vision comes to life, when they come and buy a ticket to tour this ship and learn about naval history?
Okay, so folks will actually step back in time on board the ship and be on board the Garand-class destroyer, which it is. Like, you know, folks lived there during World War II, the Korean War, and Vietnam War. So that's kind of the Cold War experience, which is what we're calling the theme of the museum itself, which will be a greater part of the Jacksonville Naval Museum, which hopefully one day that development, that area, will be able to actually develop into a naval museum for Jacksonville.
And how important is that to you as a Navy vet? And, of course, this is a Navy town.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a huge, important part of, you know, why I decided to stay here in Jacksonville to see this through and create a naval museum. When I retired from the Navy, the plan was to move back to my hometown of Tampa, but we saw great opportunity here within Jacksonville and develop a Jacksonville Naval Museum. And it's huge because, you know, we have two large bases here that employ 100,000 people. And it puts $5.1 billion in the local economy. That's billion dollars into the local economy. So that's a huge thing. We should honor that and, you know, educate children through STEM plus history. And, you know, it's a great way to inspire, you know, younger generations to become patriots themselves.
Well, we'll follow this along. It will be really cool to see when it finally docks. Justin Weekland, the Jacksonville Historic Naval Ship Association. They've been working on this for quite some time. So keep us posted.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Check it out, too, online. Go to this website, jacksnavalmuseum.org. And, you know, these guys, They have been working on this for a long time. I've been casually following it along, so it's exciting to see it taking shape. Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers as well. And thanks to our fantastic team here at WJCT Public Media, Senior Producer Heather Schatz, Associate Producer Catherine Hobbs, Director Josh Torres, with technical help from Isabella Da Silva, Editorial Director Jessica Palumbo, and Digital Editor Bill Bortsfield, and the entire news team. Keep your emails coming. We love your feedback. Drop us a line at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And again, make sure to join us today at noon on our statewide show, The Florida Roundup. We speak with Federal Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona as the Biden White House is now getting involved in the fight in Florida over school districts and masks. What the Department of Ed has to say about all this. That's today at noon on The Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for listening. Get vaccinated and wear your mask. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.